Good morning. Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. Last month's deadly school shooting in Parkland, Florida, seems to have changed the tone of the gun debate in America. Student-led demonstrations have sparked what some are calling a new gun control movement. Major corporations are being pressured to cut ties with the National Rifle Association, and President Trump has indicated an openness to strengthening background checks and other measures. Today, we're looking at what policies researchers recommend to curb gun violence and why state and federal lawmakers have a hard time getting anything passed. We want to hear from you. Call now at 277-5866 or comment on Twitter with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. Joining us today in the studio is Gail Dye, president of the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association. Good morning.
Good morning, Hannah.
Thanks for being here. And by phone, we have Cheryl Haas of Moms Demand Action NM. Thank you for being on the line. Oh, Cheryl will join us in just a moment, and we'll have another couple of guests joining us soon as well. Before we jump in, I just want to acknowledge gun rights and gun control are huge, complicated issues. So today in this conversation, we're going to try to stay focused on ways to prevent mass shootings, specifically school shootings. So suicide, kids getting a hold of guns at home, self-protection, hunting, all of those are really important issues, but they're not what we're focusing on today. Do we have Cheryl on the line?
Hi, this is Cheryl.
Hi, Cheryl. I wanted to toss you a question to kick off the conversation. Cheryl, you've been advocating on these issues for years, I understand, and you also work in a public school, is that right?
That's right.
How do you think the aftermath of this Parkland, Florida shooting last a couple weeks ago, how does it feel different than other recent shootings?
Well, I'm a volunteer with Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense, which was founded the day after Sandy Hook. And I've been volunteering with them for about 4 years. And we have never seen anything like the response that we've seen after this shooting in Florida, both locally and across the country. We had our monthly meeting last night. We normally get about 20 people. We had to change our venue because we had over 160 people come last night. And this has been happening across the country with Moms Demand Action. In Raleigh, North Carolina, they normally get 20. They had over 300. Because people are fed up with watching our children die. And so we hope this is a tipping point because enough is enough.
I want to put the same question to Gail here. How does the response feel different in your communities?
That's an excellent question, and I don't know the answer to it. I know that there are every shooter, every honest, law-abiding, hardworking shooter in the country feels the pain that the other folks feel, the moms against against guns. Everybody feels bad about it, and we feel even worse because we do deal with guns and because we do know safety rules, and we don't suggest that people use guns in an untoward way. We preach safety, and so it hurts us tremendously. Why this one has seemed to be the tipping point, as Cheryl says, I don't know. I really don't. And I'm, on one hand, very glad it's happening. On the other hand, I hope that we don't go overboard and let the honest, law-abiding citizens suffer because of these very unfortunate events.
Gail, I want to ask you about a definition before we really dive into everything, because many people argue at times like these that there's a difference between, you know, guns that are sufficient for hunting and personal protection and those that are meant for military combat. But I'm not sure we all really know what an assault style rifle is. I mean, is that a meaningful distinction, or what's the real difference for those of us who don't know guns?
Once again, that's a good question. The name AR-15 really stands for Armalite rifle. It is used by the military and by law enforcement agencies, and so it has taken the name assault rifle, and that's a misnomer. The military and the law enforcement agencies and so on also use pistols and shotguns. So I think anything that is used against another human being could be called an assault something. And so the name itself is not really correct. They're typically black guns. They just look a little different than a regular shotgun or rifle. And they have a capacity typically of 30 rounds, but a lot of other guns can have an increased capacity too based on the type magazine and so on.
Okay, and is there a difference in the amount of power, like the force that the
typically a rifle does expel more power than a 22, a plinking gun. So it depends upon the gun and the caliber.
Okay, so it sounds like it's really more complicated than just assault style versus something else.
It surely is.
Thank you for that. I want to welcome Sean Willoughby in the studio this morning, president of the Albuquerque Police Officers Association.
Yes, thank you so much for the opportunity to be a part of the conversation.
Thanks for being here. Sean, can you just briefly get us up to speed on New Mexico gun laws? So what does it take to buy a gun? Are there places guns are off limits?
New Mexico has... I think that there's definitely some work that can be done in New Mexico. In New Mexico... We have some good gun laws for gun owners. For instance, your vehicle is an extension of your home. You can have a gun in your vehicle. We do have concealed carry. We do practice all of the national standards with background checks. The one thing about New Mexico is that there's also private sales. So in New Mexico, in the paper, you can definitely advertise a weapon for sale and sell it privately,
or on Craigslist or Arms List,
Craigslist. That is definitely a component of some common sense legislation that when it's attempted to be changed in New Mexico, it goes too far, right? I mean, there's this huge.
Sorry,
debate.
I don't want to confuse us yet. We'll definitely get into the policy recommendations, but I want to just hear first what the existing laws are.
Well, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have the right to bear arms, and I'm a gun owner. I love shooting as a sport. I love to hunt. I carry a gun every single day of my life in the profession that I've chosen. There are a lot of guns in the United States, and I know that if you go to any gun store, you can purchase a legal firearm if you're able to do so with an FFL.
FFL, what is that?
The federal licensing, the background check that's established for when you do purchase a weapon.
Okay. Are there any types of guns off limits? So we're just getting some definitions. Are there any types of guns that are off limits by New Mexico state law?
No, I don't believe there's anything off limits unless it's extremely crazy, like we're not allowed to have grenade launchers and rocket launchers and stuff, but we're allowed to have assault rifles and purchase all of the guns that are on the general market.
Mm-hmm. And so there's no special permit required for open carry, as you said.
Yes.
But there is a special permit for concealed carry.
Yes.
Is that right? Okay. Okay, I think that maybe clears some things up. Actually, one more thing. So there are the standard background check is required at shops, as you said.
Yeah, if you purchase from a licensed dealer.
From licensed dealers. But there are some cases where that background check doesn't happen.
Private sales.
And then at gun shows, is that right?
Actually, it's a common misconception. Most individuals that are at gun shows are actual licensed dealers. I've purchased many guns from gun shows. I enjoy going to gun shows, and every single time I've purchased a gun there, I have to go through an FFL.
Okay. So the sort of gun show loophole that gets thrown around, is that only if there were to be private sellers at the show?
Yeah, it's a common misconception, because in order to go to a gun show, you need to have a large inventory of guns. You know, this is a business. So I mean, I think that it would be interesting just to debate the conversation of how many actual businesses are selling guns at gun shows versus private sales. I think your private sales at gun show are far and few in between. I've never been at a gun show and purchased a gun where I didn't have to do an FFL background check.
Hmm. And so that's an area where it's just the state nor federal nor local governments really look into it that carefully, so that we don't really have numbers or anything.
Yeah, the real sticking point with gun legislation, I believe, in the state of New Mexico from both sides of the fence is private sales. It's on the internet. It's in the paper. I think that we can talk about that, of the benefits and the dangers of having private sales without a background check. But like I said, I've purchased many firearms from gun shows, and I've always had a background.
Okay. Thank you for clearing that up. We have also now on the line Miranda Viscoli of New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence. Hi, Miranda.
Oh, hi. I don't know if you can hear me. Can you hear me well?
We can hear you. Thanks for being there.
Okay. Sure.
So I want to jump into, now that we sort of have the laws on the books a little clearer, I want to jump into looking at three specific recommendations. And these are from a 2015 study by the nonprofit Educational Fund to Stop Gun Violence. So that report, the one that I'm working off of, is tailored to New Mexico, and it's based on a review of public health research. And so the first recommendation that I want to discuss with you all has to do with using background checks to prevent a person from buying guns if there are certain indicators that they're likely to be violent. And so we'll dig into that. But Miranda, what are some of those risk factors for violence that could show up in a person's record?
So what we look at in terms of risk, so right now there's going to be a lot of talk that as we see after every mass shooting, that we have to do something with those suffering from mental illness. Well, we can see from peer-reviewed evidence-based studies that only 4% of people who are suffering from mental illness will be violent towards somebody else. They're most likely to commit suicide. So what we look at, in fact, the Gifford Center to Prevent Gun Violence gives us an F in our laws because we have very weak gun laws in New Mexico. So what we look at is what laws could we pass that would actually make a difference. And our one major risk factor is domestic violence. So that's why we last year worked on legislation and passed it through the House and Senate to get guns out of the hands of domestic violence offenders under a protective order. That's a high risk factor. People who have more than one violent misdemeanor, that's a high risk factor. We would recommend passing legislation that would say, look, if you have three or more violent misdemeanors on your record, you don't get to keep a gun for 10 years, right?
And what's an example of a violent misdemeanor?
That's basic. I'll let our officer or lieutenant, I'm sorry, answer that. So basically, if you have a misdemeanor, we'll use violence. So let's say you punch somebody, or let's say you beat up your wife, or in some way use violence towards somebody else, and it was only a misdemeanor charge, not a felony charge. We would highly recommend that those people, they fall into that high-risk category of potentially hurting somebody with a firearm. We also, another risk factor is drug addiction and DUI. So as you see in the Education to Stop Gun Violence, which is a fantastic organization, actually is my favorite gun violence prevention organization, because they really do look at research and what laws would prevent. Looking at people with DUI and DWI, if they have a lot of DUIs on their record, they too fall into a category of somebody who could hurt somebody else with a firearm, because we know that drugs and alcohol and firearms are a high-risk combination.
All right. Thanks for that explanation. Gail, you're making some notes. I mean, what are your thoughts about this specific recommendation of look at someone who has things in their background that indicate they might be violent in the future? I mean, what do you think of that?
Well, I think the recent issue in Florida pointed that out. The young man had 39 calls, or his family, his home had 39 calls due to violence. And so that should have been a real good indicator. I'm with Miranda completely on the violent misdemeanors and drug and DUI, drug and DUI convictions. Those are clearly indicators that a weapon of some type could be used against another person.
Wow, I didn't think we'd find such a point of agreement so fast.
Well, may I go on to say, though, that the problem with that is we're limited by the NICS system, which is the federal system, the one that we call into. I worked for several months for a local gun store, and we call in after the people fill out their form, and we give the information, or by computer, information to NICS, and they search the background and so on. Unfortunately, a lot of the crimes, a lot of the issues, such as drug or mental illness, do not wind up in a person's file. And so there's nothing that NICS can go to and grab onto and say this is a person who should not own a weapon or should not be permitted to buy one. So we have a long way to go. It's not just New Mexico. It's national. It's the NICS system. It's a huge hurdle to get over. But once we get information, pertinent information, into the system, then perhaps we can stop some of the sales that have led to these events, these unfortunate events.
Mm-hmm. And I do want to get it, because I know Congress has looked at a bill that I think they're terming Fix NICS since last year, and it hasn't gone very far. But we'll get into that a little bit later in the show. Sean, talk about the feasibility from an enforcement perspective of this kind of policy.
That's actually the nux of the conversation, right? Mm-hmm. How is it? How much does it cost? How do we enforce it? And where does it go? And who cares about this information being collected in data, right? I mean, there's fights all across the country with collecting license plate data to try to prevent auto theft measures from the ACLU. So, I mean, are there common sense ways to make it more challenging for individuals who shouldn't have gun? In fact, most of my career, it's been well known that if you're convicted of domestic violence, you are no longer allowed to have a weapon in the state of New Mexico. It's always been part of the law here. That being said, it is a very challenging situation. I mean, we're talking about this topic because an individual who, whether he was suffering from mental illness or it was documented he was mentally ill, or there's only 4% of mental ill individuals statistically that used violence as their means of a negative outlet. This is an individual who had multiple contacts with police. For instance, in the city of Albuquerque, I'm very limited to what I can and can't do in even felony crimes. There's a list of misdemeanor crimes in Albuquerque that I'm not allowed to arrest for unless I have an actual reason a mitigating circumstance of that I can explain of why I had to make this arrest
because
and I couldn't
of
do
the
something
priorities,
else, right?
Because...
right? So at the end of the day, you have a system that doesn't back up the actual conversation, right? I mean, the entire judicial system is broken in a lot of different places. The DA is prosecuting 44% of his felony crimes in the county of Bernalillo. How does that work to actually fix the problem?
Okay. We do need to go to a quick break. Keep those calls coming. We'll get some listener comments in soon. The number is 277-5866. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9. Back in a minute.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated Native American law, criminal defense, wrongful death, and civil rights in New Mexico and nationwide. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
We still need volunteers to help answer phones during our March fundraiser, especially the last 2 days, Thursday and Friday, March 22nd and 23rd. These are usually our busiest days, so if you can spare 2 or 3 hours, please sign up. We'll feed you as well. Drive time and evening shifts get dinner from Fantang. Get short video training you can watch from home. Just sign up at KUNM.org, look for Help Answer Phones, or call 277-4516.
On a beautiful summer day in Prague, composer Lajos Janáček was soaking up the sun, listening to a military band practice. Those sounds he heard on that beautiful sunny day led to this, the Sinfonietta by Janáček. It's on the way from a concert by the LA Philharmonic on the next performance today from 8 p.m.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. Our focus today, preventing gun violence in schools. Would you support background checks for all gun purchases? Should courts and police be able to remove guns from people with a history of violence? Call in now, 277-KUNM. That's 277-5866. We're also on Twitter. Use the hashtag Let's Talk NM. We had an email comment from Jean. She says, all guns should be registered and gun owners should have to pass a proficiency test. She also says all semi-automatic weapons should be banned and that the legal age to buy a gun should be 21. That's from Jean. I want to go to a call now. Carmen is on the line from Rio Rancho. Good morning, Carmen. What's your comment?
Good morning. I'm a parent of three children in elementary school, and there's a meeting in Rio Rancho tonight for parents around shooter safety and what happens in the schools. And I want to talk about the research of that needs to be done around this. At the national level, Congress is still not funding that this is a public health crisis. And that's one starting point for a solution, that there needs to be funding to allow our public health scientists to research and study this. And what's preventing us from, in New Mexico, from doing our own studies with our own researchers? Because this is one of the places, just as your caller or your guests were talking about, that the systems are broken. And in order to look at the structural changes around gun safety, there has to be a connection to understanding all the parts that aren't fitting together. And that requires the research and the allocation of resources for us to do that type of research to protect our children. So that's one part of what I think needs to be done, and we need to be doing this in New Mexico, not waiting on the federal government to approve that funding, but we should be able to do it state by state to make sure that we know what the status is. The second thing that I want to say related to that research is what we also know is that within the United States, that of gun victims from violence, whether it's in mass shootings or individual deaths, that half of the men are Black. And we've got to be talking about the racial inequities around gun violence. And then also in New Mexico about
thank
the
you,
women.
Carmen. I'm going to pause you there. I do want to put that that question to Sean Willoughby of the police union here.
Yes.
I mean, how do we make sure that enforcement isn't discriminatory?
Well, I'll tell you this. That was a great call. It was loaded. It's part of the conversation. Illinois has very restrictive gun laws. Chicago has one of the absolute worst homicide rate by gun violence that the country has to offer. There's 300 million weapons in the United States of America. You're talking about an individual who is committing a massacre. Do you really believe in your heart of hearts that restricting law-abiding citizens is going to prevent this individual from having to go through with a homicide? I mean, we're talking two totally different worlds, and we need to get to a common sense reality. If this individual is willing to go through with this atrocity, which I think it's not enough to call it a school shooting or school violence. This is a massacre. This is incorrigible. It is completely ridiculous. Our kids are not being protected in the way that they should be. There is no excuse for it. And to equate tougher gun laws to stopping this problem is structurally ignorant. There are a lot of guns in the U.S., and that's never, ever going to change. You have to think about this from an outside-of-the-box mechanism. If it's not a gun, it's a pipe bomb. You can go on the internet right now and learn how to do it. How many people is that going to hurt? So, I mean, you have to really look at this from, like this caller was saying, I totally believe that we have to invest in our public schools. Why can I not go to the administration of APS without going to security checkpoint? Why? You can't. Try it. I can't go to a courthouse. I can't go to a police station. I can't go anywhere of substance.
So you think one of the solutions should be more security?
Well, I mean, not only more security, but more funding to build schools that are better responding to these types of situations, right? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Sean, I'm going to pause you there just because we have a lot of callers,
which is great.
I want to take a call from Dorothy in Tijeras. Dorothy, what's your comment? Thanks for calling.
Hannah?
Yeah.
Hello?
You're on the air, Dorothy.
Okay. Hi. Thank you so much. There's so many issues to address. But first, I'm a gun owner. I live in a rural area. I've actually used one of our rifles to scare off a bear that was trying to get too close to the house. I didn't hurt him, didn't hit him, just scared him off. But so I am a gun owner. But I have a new saying. I'm not afraid of guns. I'm afraid of people with guns. When I go into a restaurant or a grocery store and I worry about my children and my grandchildren, what about my right to feel safe? I don't know that person with a sidearm is physically capable, has the skills to use the sidearm. I don't know if he or she is mentally stable. Recently, there was an incident where a child shot her mother in a grocery store by pulling the gun out of the purse. So I'm upset that we don't have stricter laws regarding carrying weapons in public, that there aren't tests, that there aren't things that people have to go through, because I have lost my right to feel safe when I see someone in the grocery store that's carrying, because I don't know what that person's level of skill or emotional stability is. So,
Dorothy, thank you so much for that comment. Let's go to another call. Bill in Albuquerque, what would you like to say?
Yes, please don't cut me off. What is an honest gun owner? We had two individuals, they both got drunk, one shot the other in the back. These were professional trained individuals. We had another individual who was on a drug bus, shot rapidly, another officer mindlessly shot his gun 9 times. What is an honest gun owner?
Thanks for that, Bill. Gail, I mean, I guess we'll put that question to you. It's kind of a little vague, but what is an honest gun owner?
Thank you. Sean talked about 300 million guns in the country. There are also, it's estimated, 120 million gun owners. So take that number, divide it by the people who commit these kinds of crimes, and I think you'll see that 99.999% of gun owners are what I call honest, law-abiding citizens. Anybody can crack under pressure, under drug affliction, under alcohol, you name it. They can go nuts. So it's still a very small percentage of all the gun owners in the country who commit these heinous crimes.
I want to go to another caller, another Bill in Albuquerque. You're on the line.
Yes, I'm a veteran and a gun owner, but I support the Japanese approach in a modified way for the U.S. That is, it's required that you go through training before you can own that firearm, and it's also required that you do psychological testing. As the lieutenant said, if you're a criminal and you're going to commit a crime, you're going to find some kind of weapon to do that. But for the people who are mentally unstable, psychologically unstable, doing testing eliminates a lot of those people. They only have 10 deaths a year in Japan due to firearms. And that's because you can own a firearm, but you have to be responsible. You have to go through training, and you have to do psychological testing. And I'm very much in support of that. If you carry a firearm in the open in the United States, whether I think you have to go through psychological testing and pass that before you're allowed to do that.
Dilbert in Santa Fe, let's hear from you next. You're on the air, Dilbert.
Hi, yeah. My question is more about the background checks. During a background check, they check the individual. But what about the household? Okay, what if there's somebody in the household that's not able to get through the background check and get the guns? The guns are available now to those persons. This is opening up huge controversy.
Can I respond
to
that?
Yeah, go ahead, Sean. Who is not a lieutenant,
I'm not a
right?
lieutenant. I'm just a police officer. I've been a police officer for 15 years. I'm elected by police officers mm-hmm. to represent the Albuquerque Police Officers Association. So thank you for the promotion, but it's not necessary. I think that what this exposes in our country is why I'm so energized to be a part of the conversation. Right. I mean, you don't know what it's like to have a family member in your family that needs mental health services. And there's nothing you can do because they're over the age of 18. Like the mother of this child in Florida called repeatedly. He's a danger to himself. He's a danger to society. I need help. I need help. I need help. We don't have the ability to involuntarily commit somebody based on somebody else's interpretation. If they want to harm themselves and they basically tell a doctor, with their own words, I'm feeling suicidal, you can maybe commit them for counseling for up to 2 days. But we need to have the deep conversation. And it came up earlier about drug addiction. You know how difficult it is? Nobody can get against their will committed for detox. This is all voluntary programs, which sets people up to fail. 64,000 people die of heroin overdose a year, and there's nothing these families can do about it.
I want to get to another recommendation, which actually segues nicely from that. Because another recommendation from this study was to create a process for family members or police officers in some cases to file a gun violence restraining order. So working similarly to like a domestic violence restraining order against an individual they think is unstable or violent. Miranda, can you help explain this? And also, you know, the question from a lot of people, I think, is doesn't this threaten people's rights? I mean, if someone else can decide if they're fit to own a gun or not.
So the gun violence restraining order is a great way to get guns out of unsafe hands. What it means is that states enact new legislation that temporarily prohibits individuals from purchasing or possessing a firearm, but family members and intimate partners can petition to a judge to have that gun temporarily removed. California, Connecticut, and Indiana have already enacted these laws, and they have shown to be working with people who are suicidal, who have a substance abuse problem, or who are potentially violent. And it is fair in that the individual can go to the hearing and petition as well, and they can also petition to get it back. So what it does is it takes guns out of that heated situation, and the person gets their gun back. And I want to stress the one thing in terms of domestic violence. Sean had said that we already have this law in the book. We have this law in the book in terms of the federal law. Our state law does not match our federal law. We know of cases right now where very dangerous individuals with more than one gun who have threatened their ex-wives repeatedly and their children still have their guns, because all the judge can say is, under federal law, you can't have that gun. But our police cannot remove the gun. Only ATF and the feds can, and they're too busy dealing with the 10,000 fugitives running from the law that we have in New Mexico. So it's really important to make that distinction. And also in terms of Chicago, we hear that argument over and over. Chicago neighbors to states with some of the weakest gun laws in the country, and we're not doing anything about the straw purchasing that's going on. The handguns in Chicago are coming from those areas. And so we really have to make sure that we take the whole picture into consideration. And the point that Gilbert made on what about the rest of the household, it really also points to why we need child access prevention laws, so that gun owners and parents who do have guns, they need to be held accountable. If their child gets hold of a gun and hurts him or herself or somebody else, then that gun owner needs to be accountable. What child access prevention laws do is they really educate parents to lock up their guns.
Okay. And Miranda, I do want to stick with the theme of mass shootings, school shootings. And I want to get back to these red flag laws in a second, but I'm going to take a call really quick. Nigel from Santa Fe, you're on the line.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. What's your comment, Nigel?
Okay, I was going to mention that the sort of red herrings that are consistently put out about gun ownership and how that, you know, that only criminals can get there. I mean, how many other countries in the world have mass shootings of their citizenry on a weekly, monthly basis? None. okay? What is one of the fundamental differences? Gun control laws. So, you know, saying that, you know, having gun control laws is not going to make any difference is just an absolute crock.
Thank you for that, Nigel. I'm going to go to another call. Bonnie is on the line from Las Vegas.
Hello.
Hi, Bonnie. You're on the air.
Bonnie, I joined the conversation a little later. I just wanted to mention the Dickey Amendment. Has anyone talked about that at all?
Yeah, we have had someone talk about how Congress doesn't allow funding to research gun violence with the CDC. But what did you want to add?
Six, attached to an omnibus bill, and it states that none of the funds made available for injury prevention and control at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention may be used to advocate or promote gun control. So on a federal level, we're not allowed to study gun violence and use data to look at ways that we can help prevent it. And we need to talk to our legislators on a federal level that this needs to be repealed.
All right. Thank you, Bonnie. Appreciate all those calls. We've got a lot of strong feelings about this in the studio, on the phone lines. I really appreciate everyone's attention to this. Let's take a quick break. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. Back in a minute.
The budget submitted by the president to Congress this month again proposes defunding public broadcasting. We can't let that happen. If you value public radio, join Protect My Public Media and donate today. Return your mailing or give with any major credit card from as little as $5 to as much as you can afford at KUNM.org. That's where you can also see the buttons that show you are proud to go public and the books and bike prizes donated to encourage your support. KUNM.
On the next Native America Calling, we're getting into the spirit of film and talking with some Native members of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. Those are the people who helped pick the Oscar winners. We're also looking back at the exciting Native films that came out in 2017, like Wind River, Mankiller, and Hostiles. Please join us.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm Hannah Colton. We're talking about gun violence and how to prevent school shootings. Are you a gun owner? How well does the National Rifle Association represent your opinions about gun laws? Join the conversation by calling 1-877-899-5866, or if you're in Albuquerque, 277-5866. You can also email letstalk@kunm.org. I want to welcome to the program Justin Horvath, who's a freelance reporter in Santa Fe. Good morning, Justin.
Hi, Hannah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being on. I don't know if you've been listening. A lot of strong opinions, strong thoughts on this topic. I want to get into the politics around this, but kind of a central question, why don't these kinds of research-based policies have legs in New Mexico or in the U.S. Congress for that matter?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people would argue that a lot of it does have to do with the NRA's political clout. And, you know, like any other big membership-based organization, they do make contributions to members of Congress and state legislators. But I think that a lot of that clout is actually based off of their ability to mobilize their membership around just a single issue. And they do this with their scorecards that they issue, which are kind of simple ways to evaluate somebody, you know, where they stand on gun control laws.
Okay, and you know, we see the NRA sort of villainized in the media. We have boycott NRA as a movement. Gail, can you talk about among gun owners? You know, I mean, what is the what kind of association do people have with the NRA in New Mexico?
I don't have the numbers for membership in New Mexico. However, I'm a member, and I'm a life member and a benefactor member. The NRA stands for our rights under the Second Amendment, and sometimes they appear to be heavy-handed. I will admit. I'm the first to admit. However, they are the ones, they have taken on that duty to protect our rights under the Second Amendment. And there are, last count that I know of, is about 6 million members nationwide. So it's not a group that is going to overrun the government by any means. And I would say that, again, that vast majority of members are the law-abiding citizens that think they should have their rights under the Second Amendment, but don't want to see the kind of heinous crimes that have been committed with firearms.
And again, this is Gail Dye of the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association in the studio. We also have Sean Willoughby of the Albuquerque Police Union. And on the line, we have Miranda Viscoli of New Mexicans to End Gun Violence, as well as Justin Horvath, a reporter in Santa Fe. Thank you all for being here. Let's go to a call. Jim in Nob Hill, you're on the phone.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. My understanding is all the way from Aurora, Colorado, to the Batman movie shooting, to Sandy Hook, to the Pulse nightclub, to the shooting in the church in Alabama, to the shooting in the church in Texas, that for all of those were those law-abiding citizens' first criminal act. And so I believe that, yes, if we put some restrictions on law-abiding citizens having access to some of these weapons, that maybe we will have fewer massacres conducted by law-abiding citizens.
Thanks for that, Jim. Justin, can you talk about who gets money from the NRA in New Mexico as far as political campaigns?
Yeah, sure. I published an article in the Santa Fe Reporter last week that reported since the 1998 election cycle to 2016, there have been $131,000 worth of contributions to members of Congress in the New Mexico congressional delegation. Majority of those contributions have gone to Republicans. Steve Pierce, a U.S. rep who's also running for governor, has taken $28,900 since the 2004 election cycle. But the NRA, you know, they also donate to Democrats, too. Among those in the congressional delegation was Martin Heinrich, who received a couple thousand dollars in contributions.
And Senator Martin Heinrich is an interesting example because he's really backed away from the NRA sort of steadily over the last 5 years or so, I believe. Do you think that indicates sort of a cultural shift at all, or was he just an anomaly to begin with as a Democrat?
Well, I don't think in New Mexico he's not an anomaly because a lot of Democrats in New Mexico are, you know, gun owners themselves. But I think that the politics in D.C. and just kind of the NRA's political positions did make him pause. And he told the Albuquerque Journal in 2016 that the NRA really doesn't represent his views in terms of gun ownership, and that he would rather be a member of sportsmen's groups. And he's kind of since denounced any support that he was perceived of giving to the NRA.
All right. Miranda Viscoli of New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence. What are your thoughts on the NRA's influence over legislation, either locally or at the national level?
I think we have to keep in mind that with the NRA, it's not just money. And they're doing a lot behind the scenes, which we see at the legislature, in terms of watering down bills or killing them. And we also have to look at how the NRA has infiltrated itself into our communities. New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence, we have a lot of members who are gun owners, and they have nothing to do with the NRA. They don't want anything to do with the NRA because they're so extreme. But we have to see how the NRA, how they've woven themselves into our schools. The majority of the work we do at New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence is with our young people. And I can tell you that we have school boards, we have principals, we have superintendents that are putting out that message that knives kill more people than guns, that guns don't kill people. You also have the Teaching Freedom grants from the NRA. These are grants that our schools in New Mexico are taking from the NRA, and it's great to teach gun safety. And Gail and I do agree on quite more than people would expect. And, you know, gun safety is fantastic, especially teaching our young hunters how to be safe with guns. We work a lot with our teenage hunters who, you know, we celebrate them. They're actually some of our safest gun owners. But, and so those grants do go after that, but they also teach, you know, a kind of one-sided look at the Second Amendment in our schools. And I'll also say this, that the NRA is a very racist organization. When you have Ted Nugent as a board member and you don't rein him in when he makes comments such as, I would like to kill undocumented workers, your organization has a problem. When you have the NRA TV host saying, I want to wipe the Mochaccino stain off of our country now that Obama's no longer president, that is an extremely vile and racist statement. So we have to really think about what messages is the NRA putting forward, their insurrectionist agenda.
All right, Miranda, I'm going to pause you there because we have quite a few people on the line still. I want to get some people in before the end of the show. Cal in Los Lomas, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Good morning to Miranda, by the way. Just a couple of comments from me. I'm a gun owner, but also support New Mexicans Prevent Gun Violence. Commenter earlier said that she felt unsafe with people like me around. I'd like to point out that's really a form of profiling. What I really want to ask the panel is, we've had quite a few suggestions as to laws that may make the state safer. Two are child access prevention and universal background checks. Why can't these be provided free or with some sort of cost reduction? For example, anyone who buys a gun safe, especially if they have kids or if they live in a city, should get a tax rebate on the gun safe because that both prevents child access and it cuts down on theft. If we were a point of contact state, it could possibly work out that any sheriff's deputy could go out to a rural area and assist in a background check between two private individuals without those people having to, you know, to drive all the way to Santa Fe or to an FFL. So what I'd like to know is it possible to get some legislation that would provide some carrots to gun owners rather than always it seems to me we're seeing sticks? So
all right.
My comment.
Thank you, Cal. Let's hear from one more listener, Al in Albuquerque.
Hi there. So I am an Iraq war veteran, and when I was there, we had these weapon buyback programs. We'd pay Iraqi civilians for their old weapons, and they'd get amnesty, and they'd also get some cash. And I think the problem is there are too many guns in this country, and I think if we cut down on manufacturing and had some sort of incentive to sell them back, to destroy the guns, then we'd see a cut down on these mass shootings. That's just my comment.
Thanks, Al. I want to get back to that idea of carrots instead of sticks for gun owners. Miranda, what are your thoughts on that?
I agree with Cal 100%, and Cal's an example of a gun owner who really wants to see gun violence prevention, and I think he made some really, really good points, especially in encouraging our people to lock up their guns, giving gun owners an incentive. You know, we all have to get at the table and figure out what can we do. And so I 100% agree with Cal, and I think he made some very good points.
Gail, you're kind of nodding along. What are your thoughts on that, the carrot versus stick argument?
Well, Miranda, we're right there together again. Carrots are great. I know Calibers locally offers gun purchasers a couple-hour class on safety, and that's an idea that I had proposed to other gun stores around the city and the state. I think if we get that training, 2 hours is not enough. Do not misunderstand, but it is a start for new gun owners. So I think free classes. I think I love the idea of tax rebate on gun safes and maybe even gun training, and I think maybe that's something we ought to look into in the state. I also have to take this moment to say, even though I'm an NRA member, I would never approve of any of those comments that were mentioned earlier. I was not aware of some of those.
The racist comments is what you're referring
comments,
to.
Racist comments, absolutely right. I would no way support those.
Thanks for that, Gail. Justin, I want to put a question to you. The proposals that are in the air at the federal level are oftentimes, you know, banning bump stocks. That's the mechanism that makes a semi-auto into a fully auto, raising the age to 21, arming teachers. I mean, those are all proposals that we haven't even talked about this morning, and that's perhaps because they're not as feasible or perhaps not as research-based. But why do you think those get a lot of press?
Well, I think they get a lot of press because, in part, because members of Congress have proposed those very same ideas. I mean, Michelle Lujan Grisham is one example. She was a co-author of a bill in October that would have banned bump stocks, but it went nowhere, just kind of given the current political makeup and climate of Congress. And I think that, I mean, to me, it's going to be interesting to see whether the latest shooting in Parkland produces some sort of legislation on the federal level.
Right. I mean, what would the rest of our panelists think about that? I mean, are we going to see any legislation passed?
I think you're going to see legislation passed. I believe that's going to be definite. But I mean, there's an element of common sense here, right? Buck stops, that the actual weapon mechanism that was used in Vegas. Common sense. I don't believe anybody needs a fully automatic weapon that they can order something on the internet and run around town. Moving the age to buy, you can't buy a handgun until you're 21. If you move the age to 21 to buy your own rifle, and juveniles that are hunters have to be in the presence of a child. I mean, these are some common sense middle ground, private sales of gun ownership. Common sense, middle ground, calmer heads will always prevail. One thing I want to bring to the fold, you know, Miranda had said something earlier that really caught my attention, straw purchases. Straw purchases are against the law, but yet there's less than 50,000 actual convictions. Straw purchases meaning I am a legal, law-abiding citizen that can purchase a weapon, and Miranda is not. So I buy the weapon and I give it to Miranda because she can't buy a weapon. So, I mean, this is a perfect example of, we have a law on the books. It is illegal to do, but there's been less than, I think there's 40,000 convictions since this was on the books. So, I mean, we really need to have a deeper conversation. Yes, we can pass legislation. Yes, it can be common sense. Yes, there's agreement on both sides of the table. But what about the real true issue, right? We're talking about mass shootings. What do we do? The conversation with the teachers, I don't think we should force guns in teachers' hands. But if you have a teacher that's trained and wants to be regulated and go through the class, and they feel that they can protect their students and themselves, and they voluntarily choose to do so, common sense, why not let them have the opportunity? When you fly the friendly skies in the United States, pilots carry guns when they volunteer for the program to protect the cockpit. That's going to prevent a plane going into a building. It's common sense.
So we have, Gail, I want to ask what you think about that, because we have, you know, sort of had some verbal agreement on certain things, but it sounds like it's almost a funding issue, right? For law enforcement, for judicial system. I mean, these laws aren't being enforced, is what Sean says. But Gail, what do you think should happen at the local or state level?
I think our governor had a great idea, and that was to use retired police officers at each of the schools. If you think about all the schools in our area and across the country, we're going to have to find an awful lot of retired police officers. But if someone is trained, knows how to use a weapon, has been through the active shooter training, through combat training, those are the folks that we probably should have protecting our schools.
Okay, Miranda, just about 15 seconds, final thoughts on what should happen at state and local level.
State and local level, I would definitely pass that domestic violence bill so that police officers can get those guns out of their hands. And also, we need to match our state laws to our federal laws when it comes to licensed dealers selling guns, because that would really help in the straw purchasing. ATF does not have the resources to go after the straw purchasing on the south side of the border.
Thank you. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you to everyone who called in this morning. Thanks again to our guests, Gail Dye, Justin Horvath, Miranda Viscoli, Sean Willoughby, and Cheryl Haas. The conversation doesn't have to end here. Use the hashtag #LetsTalkNM on Twitter or comment on our Facebook page. In 2 weeks on the show, we'll be talking to New Mexico students about what it's like to go to school right now and what they want to see happen next. I'm Hannah Colton. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Sarah Trujillo screened your calls. Victor Onimale live tweeted the show. Elaine Baumgartel executive produced. This is Let's Talk New Mexico.